Hear ye. All persons having any business before this Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. Please be seated.
Case number 28838, State v. Whipple. Arguing for the petitioner, Craig Jerome. Arguing for the respondent, Melanie Prescott Tate. Arguing for the merits.
Chief Justice Moon, Associate Justices of this Court, good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Craig Jerome, Deputy Public Defender, appearing on behalf of the petitioner, defendant appellant Michael Whipple. This case presents the first opportunity for this Court to interpret the statutory language of HRS Section 708-839.7 and thereby properly determine the scope of the offense of identity theft in the second degree. The question before this Court today is whether the ICA gravely erred when it held that Mr. Whipple had committed the offense of identity theft in the second degree in violation of HRS Section 708-839.7, where he had not transmitted the personal information of another, as the term another is defined, HRS Section 701-118. We contend that transmitting the personal information of a natural person is an essential element of the offense of identity theft in the second degree. In this case, it's not disputed that Mr. Whipple transmitted only the personal information of a wholly fictitious person. As such, his conviction for the offense of identity theft in the second degree violated his due process right not to be convicted except upon proof of each essential element of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. Therefore, we respectfully request that this honorable court vacate the trial court's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order denying Mr. Whipple's motion to dismiss count one, and remand this case to the trial court for an order dismissing Mr. Whipple's conviction as to that count, and for an entry to order dismissing count one identity theft in the second. In this case, the essential facts are not in dispute. Both the state and the defense have agreed as to what the essential facts are. Therefore, it appears that this case is purely a matter of statutory construction. Under HRS Section 708-839.7, a person commits the offense of identity theft in the second degree if that person transmits any personal information of another, and then it talks about various ways to do that, with the intent to commit theft in the second degree. The crux of this case is how this court is going to interpret the phrase personal information of another. Personal information is defined in Section 708-800, and we agree that the definition of personal information includes both information pertaining to actual persons and fictitious persons. We maintain, however, that that definition in the language of the actual statute defining the offense is modified and limited by the addition of the term of another. Section 701-118, which provides the general definition of terms that apply throughout the Hawaii Penal Code, unless another meaning is plainly required, defines another as any other person in pertinent, in relevant part. Person is...
Mr. Jerome, if we adopt your position, then wouldn't we be nullifying part of the definition of personal information?
I don't think it's a matter so much of nullifying part of the definition of personal information as it is enforcing...
Well, as you say, limit the definition of personal information to a specific person, then aren't you reading out, if you have to read out the reference to the fictitious person?
The reference to fictitious persons would be nullified within the specific section 708-839.7. It wouldn't be eliminated from the general definition of personal information. It's our position that the definition of personal information provides the general definition for that term that would apply to any statute within Chapter 708. And by adding the term of another, the legislature intended to apply the definition of another that applies in 701-118, which essentially is any other natural person, corporation, or unincorporated association.
You find that language personal information?
It's not in any other statute in Chapter 708 or anywhere else in the Penal Code. If it's appropriate to delve into the legislative history of the statute or the act that established this crime of identity theft, there was at one point in that bill or in that act a crime that was to be committed in created in Chapter 710 that was called deceptive use of a fictitious identity. And in that statute, the term personal information does appear. That offense was actually eliminated from Act 224, House Bill 2438, because the legislation was concerned that it was overbroad. The deceptive use of a fictitious identity, the actual language of that statute, which was to be adopted in Chapter 710, was a person commits the offense of deceptive use of a fictitious identity if that person, with the intent to deceive the person or entity to whom the statement is directed, makes or causes to be made, either directly or indirectly, and it talks about the various ways of doing that, a transmission of fictitious personal information of a person purported to be real, but it was fictitious. And in the Senate version of that statute, added for an unlawful purpose to that statute. But as I said, that was removed from Act 224. And if you look at the committee reports, it's clear that that was removed because the legislature was overbroad. And I would say that there was good reason for that concern. But our position is that the inclusion of that crime within the bill.
Excuse me. So it's originally proposed there was a crime called deceptive use of vicious identity.
Yes, sure.
And that applied to what type of crime? Did that apply to theft, the crime of theft?
If you look at it, it's in the first House version of the bill, which is attached as appendix B, I believe, of the state's answer. And it's in the Senate version of the bill, which I believe is appendix D of the state's answer. It applies, if you look at the it says, it's with the intent to deceive the person to whom the statement is made or the information is transmitted. So it would include, I suppose, theft and any other unlawful purpose. I mean, it's extremely broad, the language of the House version, and I think that's why they were concerned about it sweeping up, non-criminal activity or non-criminal acts. So it would include that.
I guess what I'm asking is, was the crux of that statute imported into the statute in front of us today?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the crime, the very serious identity theft in the Act 224 remained the same throughout the bill, throughout the various versions of the bill. So there's no indication that the legislature removed the crime deceptive use of a fictitious identity because they believed that it was already covered in the identity theft statutes or the only explanation given is that they were concerned that it was basically overly broad. So I don't think that the crux of the identity theft statute is the same as deceptive. And it's important to point out that, I believe in this case, this is deceptive use of fictitious identity is actually the crime that, if there was a crime that Mr. Woodfall committed in this, under the facts of this case, he transmitted fictitious personal information to another person, which was purported to be real, but which was, in fact, fictitious. Actually don't agree with it. Our position is that the statute is clear and unambiguous, and it says what the legislature intended it to say.
In spite of the definition, including fictitious person.
Yes, I believe so, because it's the same as any other statute where there's a broad definition and then the actual offense is.
Assume that it is ambiguous. Is there language in the legislative history that would indicate that this statute includes?
Your Honor, assuming that the statute, the plain language of the statute is ambiguous, our position is that a close look at the legislative history demonstrates that it was not the legislature's intent to include fictitious look at the committee report, conference committee report number 25, which was cited by the ICA and cited by the trial court in this case, it says the purpose of this bill is to provide criminal penalties for, one, committing identity theft of another individual, and two, obtaining identity documents under false pretenses or using a false and fictitious identity. Now, it's clear that number one applies to the identity theft statutes, and I think the plain language in the committee report, identity theft of another individual, it doesn't say of another real or fictitious individual. There's no indication that that pertains to real or fictitious persons. Number two, if this is three separate purposes, the question is why is number two grouped as together in number two? And again, if you look at the early versions of the bill, the identity theft statute appears in chapter 708. Deceptive use of a fictitious identity and the other crime, which is obtaining a government-issued ID under false pretenses, are in chapter 710.
So, Mr. Jerome, are you saying that the conference committee report number 25, when it referred to use of the purpose of prohibiting use of a false or fictitious identity, applies only to the deceptive use of fictitious identities statute that was later scrapped?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that that's supported by the precise way that the legislature in these committee reports group the purposes of the bill. Number one is set up separately from obtaining identity documents under false pretenses, which clearly applies to this, the crime of obtaining a government-issued ID under false pretenses, and using a false or fictitious identity, which, looking at that language, using a false or fictitious identity, and the title of the statute, deceptive use of a fictitious identity, and the plain language of that proposed statute, this clearly also applies to that. And I think that it would be a stretch to apply this to identity theft in the first, second, or third degree, where also throughout the legislative history, the legislature talks about committing identity theft of another individual, misappropriating another person's personal information. I think that there's nothing else in the legislative history to indicate that the legislature intended identity theft to include real or fictitious persons. Nowhere in the conference committee reports or in the purposes of the bill does it ever say identity theft of real or fictitious person.
Is there an offense now that deals with fictitious or false identity?
No, Your Honor. Other than the obtaining government-issued identification document using under false pretenses.
So in this case, under these particular circumstances, cashing a check by using a false identity.
Well, under the facts of this case, there are the crimes of attempted theft in the second degree and forgery, which Mr. Woodfall pled no contest to, and he's been sentenced for, and he's currently serving two indeterminate 5-year terms for. But there's no separate offense related to giving a fake name when you're attempting to do that.
The prosecution is leading on this particular language for use of false.
Yes, Your Honor.
And this would plug the gap.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that seems to me to be the only reference in the legislative history to all of the references in the legislative history to using a false or fictitious identity seem to be similarly connected to this time of deceptive use of a fictitious identity.
If you remove the words of another from the statute, would it be then understandable and valid?
I think the issue, if you remove the words of another, again, I think we have to report to determine because.
Yes, but I'm asking you. What do you
think? Thank you, Your Honor. I think if you remove of another, the problem is that personal information could also be interpreted as including the defendant's own personal information.
What's wrong with that? I mean, but if that's the situation, then you would cover actual persons and fictitious persons.
Yes, Your Honor, based on the...
Because look, that's included within the definition of personal information.
Yes, Your
Honor. So why is it wrong if that can be read as including the person who transmits the personal information?
You mean if the defendant is accused of transmitting his own personal information?
Right. Why do you think that would be wrong?
Because I think the situation would be that in almost every attempted theft case, if the arresting officer asked the defendant what his name was, security personnel at a store asked the defendant what his name was, he forged a check with his own name, it would automatically create this identity theft statute where there is none. If you look at the...
If you did it with the intent of theft.
Yes, Your Honor, there would still be the underlying theft charge, the attempted theft charge, but the problem is that if you look at the title of the statute, identity theft, theft under 708-830, in almost every instance, is limited to exerting control over the property of another with the intent to thereby deprive the person of the property. I don't know if one could exert control over one's own identity with the intent to deprive oneself.
It's not depriving oneself. You could deprive from any person or entity.
Yes, to commit theft against any person or entity. Our position is that it's unclear how an individual could commit identity theft of his own identity. And if you remove the of another, it's the definition of personal information would seem to make that a possible reading of the identity theft statutes.
If the statute is ambiguous, do you agree it's ambiguous?
I actually don't agree with it. Because our position is that the legislature has the intent to say when it uses the term of another.
If another means only actual person, the definition of personal information includes both actual persons and fictitious persons. Does that create an ambiguity?
I don't think that creates an ambiguity because the offense that's designed in a specific statute may modify, limit, or shed some qualified the general definition. I think that the state would agree that the term of another limits, modifies, or qualifies the general definition of personal information because there's nothing in the definition of personal information that says it can't be the defendant's personal information. And the state's position is that of another means any real or fictitious person other than the person transmitting the personal information. So I think the state agrees that this limits and qualifies the definition of personal information. It's just to what extent
Mr. General, was personal information used in any other statute?
Not any other statute.
Then why would the legislature use personal information in a statute and then limit it if it's the only statute that is being used in?
Well, I think that, if I understand the question correctly, the reason for them including the personal information of the fictitious individual was because of this other proposed statute that included fictitious personal information.
So what we have before us is the statute, and the question is whether or not it's ambiguous. Why would they put the personal information only in the statute and then qualify it and leave it in the draft? Doesn't that mean ambiguous?
That seems to be a legislative choice. I mean, the legislature...
Well, does it make sense to you? It's the only place it's used. Why would they qualify?
It makes sense if you look at it from the perspective of the definitions provide the general definitions for the term. And if you look at other statutes, there's language in many other statutes that limits the general definition, including general definitions that may not appear elsewhere in the Penal Code. For example, HRS section 701-711, the assault in the second degree statute, says a person commits the offense of assault in the second degree if the person intentionally or caused bodily injury to a correctional worker as defined in section 710-1031 subsection 2, who is engaged in the performance of duty or who is within a correctional facility. If you look at the definition of correctional worker, it's defined in the relevant part as any employee of the state or any county who works in a correctional or detention facility. So the legislature, when they included the term, the phrase, who is engaged in the performance of duty or who is within a correctional facility, limited the application of the general definition of correctional worker. General definition of correctional worker says any employee of the state. It doesn't say an employee who's engaged in the performance of his duties or who's within a correctional facility. So I think from a legislative perspective, they're free to define the general definitions as broadly as they wish and then to limit them within the specific language of the statute. I don't think that the language of the definition is controlling when we're talking about the way that the offense is defined within the statute. And the trial court's reading of the statute, they're saying that they're altering the definition of another in order to preserve the definition of personal information. But in doing so, they've sacrificed or nullified the statutorily established, legislatively established definition of another.
You put statutes on ambiguous. Can you argue the rule of benefit?
Yes, Sean. I think that that's maybe where this all comes down to in the end. This court finds that the statute is ambiguous. This court finds that the legislative history is somewhat ambiguous. The rule of lenity would control, and the statute would have to be interpreted in favor of the defendant under the rule of lenity. Your Honor, at this moment, I can't remember if it appears in the opening brief or not. But I think it's a general rule that applies when interpreting statutes, criminal statutes, penal statutes.
Well, what's that?
Just the rule of lenity.
What is it?
The rule of lenity is that the statute must be strictly construed against the government and in favor of the accused when discussing criminal statutes and ambiguities in criminal statutes. And if this court finds that the statute is ambiguous or that the legislative history is ambiguous, I think that the rule of lenity would have to be applied.
Every state has these definitions of satisfaction.
Yes, sir. Again, Your Honor, the issue wasn't brief in either of the briefs. We'd be happy to submit supplemental briefs.
What do you understand?
My understanding is that it varies from state to state, and that there are certain states that limit it to actual persons, and there are certain states that include actual and fictitious persons. The states that I looked at that include actual and fictitious persons, and I can't provide a citation. And I think that in general, if you want to include actual and fictitious persons, it should be within the plain language of the statute. I think if the legislature had written this statute as transmits any personal information of any other real or fictitious person, their intent would be clear if that was their intent. But by using the phrase of another, which we say means any other natural person, corporation, or unincorporated association, the legislature is presumed to know the meaning of the term another. And this is not an obscure term within the Hawaii Penal Code. This term appears dozens of times in the Hawaii Penal Code.
You also assume that they understand the definition of the word that you use.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And that's in the, as I said, that's in the general definition, but I think.
Don't assume they know what the definition of the phrases are.
I think that under the case law, this court must presume that they know the definitions of the law and they know the I see that my 20
minutes. Necessary, if it was a necessary offense, it's not necessary that we have to apply. We can intend something, but not carry it through validly.
Yes, sure. And in this case, if.
So then you're already looking at the language of the statute. I mean, they can intend a lot of things, but the ultimate product of their process is the actual statute itself.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's been our position all along. Our position is that if the legislature intended anything other than what they said when they used the term of another, they should have clarified that. And if they had another intent, this is a case of poor drafting. It's not a court or this court's responsibility or privilege to correct drafting errors on the part of the legislature. And I see that my original 20 minutes is up. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Good morning.
Prosecuting Attorney Dylan Prescott Tate on behalf of the State of Hawaii. May it please the court. The issue in this case is one of statutory interpretation and legislative intent. While my esteemed colleague makes a very creative argument, the only way defendants and the interpretation of the identity theft statute could be seen to be given the effect of the intent of the legislature would be to excise the term fictitious person from the definition of personal information. That is not what the legislature intended. By giving emphasis to the word another in section 708.839.7 to the exclusion of the entire definition of personal information in section 708.800, would render a part of the statutory language a nullity. As this court recently noted, it is well settled that statutory construction dictates that an interpreting court should not fashion a construction of statutory text that creates an absurd or unjust result. Defendant's interpretation of the ID theft statutes would lead to an absurd and unjust result, and it is not what the legislature intended. So we all know when we're doing statutory interpretations, there's five things that you look at. The language of the statute itself, and where the language is plain and unambiguous, the sole duty of the court is to give meaning to its plain and obvious. The statute is plain and obvious. The term personal information is the only definition in Chapter 708 applies to the ID theft statutes. Nowhere else in Chapter 708 do we use the term personal information.
Ms. Prescott, why have the words of another in the statute at all then? Would you agree that of another applies only to a real or actual person?
Not in this context, no.
So you think that if the words mean different things in different statutes?
It should use the plain dictionary definition of another.
That's statutory definition of another.
It's not within the same chapter. He's trying to import definitions from other chapters that do not apply. And my thinking is that the legislature meant to exclude the personal information of the defendant. So the person, other than the person supplying the false or fictitious information.
Didn't the House Committee report indicate that they were concerned with the misappropriation of other people's identification information?
That is correct. That was
how does that encompass fictitious people?
The effect is the same as
well, it isn't for the defendant.
But for the entities have to conduct an investigation, find out who this person is, what bank still has lost the funds, where you have an actual person who's losing their identity, and that is the first and foremost objective of this statute. They are having to spend their time correcting the information, checking their statements, making the credit reports. It's a very labor-intensive process, and whether that's real information or fraudulent information, the investigation process is going to be the same. So that was the primary objective of the IDFS statute. And sorry to say that of the other 50 states, 33 of them stand with that. ID theft is only an actual person. There's only 5 states that include fictitious information within their ID theft statutes. And some of them have divided it up into ID theft and fraudulent use. Gave us an ID theft statute, and then they gave us a definition to be applied only to the ID theft statutes, and that includes fictitious information.
So here, the language is not as specific as those other 5 states.
That's correct.
Do you agree that the language of the statute is ambiguous?
Defendant's argument. Of another is limiting of the language of personal information. In that regard, there is an ambiguity.
So as Justice of the Court suggested, there's a rule of lenity.
When you look at the statute in its entirety, along with the legislative history, it becomes apparent that fictitious information was always meant to be included in the statute. Rule of lenity does not apply in this case.
Ms. Prescott, you indicated that we shouldn't follow an interpretation of the statute that would lead to an absurd or unjust result. If we determine that the statute is ambiguous and follow the rule of lenity, why would that be absurd or unjust? Isn't Mr. Woodfall, didn't he already plead guilty to a Class B felony and a Class C felony? Isn't it presently only restricted to Open 10?
The Open 10 is on the ID theft conviction. He pled guilty to forgery in the second degree and attempted theft in the second degree. So those two crimes cover the uttering of the counterfeit check and the attempted theft of the money from First One Bank.
So those two Class C things?
Those are both Class C's.
So why would the...
Well, what is the punishment for his other actions of obtaining a fraudulent driver's license, going into the bank, presenting the cashier with a check made out to his false identity that's in his driver's license? He signs the back of the check as Christopher Bailey. He puts an address, a Honolulu address on the back of the check, a telephone number. He went to a lot of trouble to maintain his anonymity, but for the fingerprint that they made him put on the front of the check, he probably would have gotten away with it, except that the check came up insufficient funds. So what is the punishment for all of that? You know, we can't prove that he's the one that made the ID, but the information all made up.
Could that be included in the definition of forgery? Forgery covered those actions?
No, forgery, as our statutes go, maybe a falsification of a government record, but forgery is checks.
So every step that leads up to the uttering of the check, you would say it should have separate criminal consequences?
In the scheme of things, he committed more than just theft and forgery.
Is there a statute that covers if you try to get the ID?
There is now. That would be the obtaining the government, attempting to obtain government identification, which was one of the things that came in with Act 224.
Did the legislature reject the statute where the offense was using a fictitious person's identity to obtain a driver's license?
My understanding is that that is what went into the obtaining a government-issued identification document.
So with a specific reference to a driver's license, that was rejected by the legislature?
In Act 224? The driver's license statute does include fictitious. The unlawful use of a license does include having in your possession a fictitious license.
Forgery in the second degree, for which the defendant was convicted, refers to the intent to defraud, falsely making, completing, endorsing, or altering a written instrument, or uttering a forged document. So the presentation of those documents would be uttering a forged document.
Uttering the check?
Yes. Presenting the check, that's uttering,
yes.
Right, or making a representation.
Yes.
So wouldn't the conduct of the defendant be covered by the forgery statute?
With this a false or fictitious driver's
license.
Falsely
making, competing, endorsing, altering, and uttering, or uttering a forged document.
I believe that that statute is applied to checks and wills. I don't believe it.
This is instrument. Document.
It wouldn't be a document. But if we were to look, let's assume for the sake of argument that the statute is.
Right, it says written instrument or forged instrument. I'm sorry, that's the four objects.
Would the prosecutors charge him under the forged statute?
Cover the incidents that we have before us where we presented a false identification to indicate that who's the person whose name was on that check. Does the forgery statute cover this situation?
I think that the obtaining a government issued ID and unlawful use of a license covers that. Unlawful use of a license.
The circumstances of determining whether there was an offense committed. This is over for the court to get attention in case that particular offense. Are you saying that as we agree that that covers the situation where the defendant went off on a false identification of a fictitious person?
You could. Normally, used it in that manner.
Ms. Prescott, I really do appreciate the candidness on how the states split on identity theft. is attempted theft in the second degree a lesser included offense of identity theft in the second degree?
Yeah.
Why?
It is the
intent. It's the same intent, right?
Well, he's trying to pretend he's somebody he's not.
The intent is the same intent, the intent to commit theft in the second degree.
Yes.
$300 or not.
That will be an element.
So that element is in identity theft and in attempted theft in the second degree.
In the second degree.
And attempted theft in the second degree requires a substantial step. So would the transmission of any personal information in order to commit theft in the second degree constitute a substantial step in an attempted second degree theft?
That would be one of the things, yes.
So then is second degree theft an included offense of identity theft in the second degree?
No. The legislative history shows that they were creating a series of statutes that were increasing the punishment for those who attempt to utilize another's identity instead of their own. Thefts and forgeries are Class C's. And we got in the second degree is Class B. So they were trying to impress upon the non-law-abiding citizens that if you do this, you're going to suffer a more serious punishment. The purpose of the statute that was created with the catalyst behind the ID theft statute was 9/11. 31 days after the terrorist attack on the World Trade Center, the Attorney General of the State of Hawaii submitted a proposed bill related to identity. The purpose of the bill was to create criminal penalties for those who steal the identity of another or obtain identity documents under false pretenses, or those who use false or fictitious identities. It justified the bill by stating, after the terrorist attack on the East Coast, it has become apparent that identity theft and the use of false identities can be more than property crimes. In the attacks, terrorists gained access to the aircraft they hijacked by the use of false and stolen identities. Hawaii law enforcement officials need statutory tools to combat identity theft and the use of false identities. Whether the criminal's purpose is to steal the life savings of a retiree or to perpetrate a terrorist act. Also, sanctions for obtaining false identification documents must be extended beyond the current criminal penalties. So in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks, the significance of the use of false identities and the theft of another's identity has come to light. The report from the 911 Commission states that of the 19 hijackers, they had 364 aliases between them. They used these aliases to false passports, to obtain state IDs, driver's licenses. This is numerous state IDs, numerous driver's licenses. They obtained pilot's licenses, hazardous materials licenses, and gained employment and access to secured locations, such as the airport. They opened up bank accounts, credit card accounts, and use that ways to funnel financial resources to their terrorist activities. Not only does committing crimes with the use of false and stolen identities make investigation of these crimes more difficult and labor-intensive. Sadly, the use of a false or stolen identity actually increases a defendant's chances of getting rid of it. Losses to individuals and financial institutions are immense, and not only in terms of dollar amount, but also in the time that it takes to investigate and clean up after these criminal activities. You know, the internet has provided a whole new way of committing crimes. They use stolen identities or a false identity, and it provides them with a cloak of anonymity. They have also used the internet to create these false identities and identity documents. And while criminals have long used false or stolen identities to perpetrate offenses to escape the consequences of their crimes, 9/11 brought to the forefront the terrible consequences from use of false and stolen identities. So the legislative acted swiftly, and in the 2002 session, they created the three new statutes to Chapter 708, the ID theft statutes, and then they created two statutes for the government-issued identification documents under false pretenses in Chapter 710, and then they amended the unlawful use of driver's license statute.
Is risk uptake tonight?
Still on a little different tact. You indicated you thought that Mr. Gerald's argument that 7101, 118, definition of another, doesn't apply in this case.
Correct.
Isn't 701, 118, doesn't that pertain to preliminary provisions in the penal code?
Correct.
Why would it not apply in this case?
Because it's a preliminary provision that only applies if something else doesn't work better. And in this instance, the 708 definition of personal information is within the same chapter as the identity theft, and were created by the same legislature and were meant to be used together.
So we want
correct, and apply the dictionary definition of another.
You indicated in different jurisdictions, in the majority of jurisdictions, there are ID theft statutes referring to actual persons.
Yes.
And those that do not specifically indicate in the statute that repeated with also imaginary or fictitious persons.
They usually have another statute of dealing with fictitious.
Well, in this situation, we have a statute which does not specifically indicate that repeating with also not only actual persons, but also fictitious persons.
Correct.
Are you indicating that our the majority of states that only focus on actual persons. You don't believe that that's what we did here?
No.
In spite of the use of another?
The majority of the states use the term another person.
Yeah, our definition indicates another person.
Another. You know, our stops after another.
I know, but the definition of another.
Of another.
Means what?
Of an actual person. Yeah, the other states make it clear. They use actual person. Another person is 99% of what they
use. Well, with definition of another is ours,
yeah, I guess.
That would be consistent with the majority of states. Or focusing on actual persons.
Well, rarely in the other states, do they separate it and just use another? It's always another person. Whereas in our statute, we're just another. it should just be another, as in the dictionary definition, as an additional one of the same kind, one more. Statute, the primary goal is to give effect to the legislative intent. No specific language of the statute must be examined or treated as meaningless. No part of the statutory language should be ignored. Words must be given their plain and ordinary dictionary meaning unless another definition clearly meant to be. Our legislature has deemed it appropriate to address the economic impact of fraudulent use of identity through Act 224. Those being the identity theft in the first, second degree, obtaining a government-issued identification document under false pretenses in the first and second degree, and amending the unlawful use of driver's license statute. These statutes were designed to punish those who use an identity other than their own to commit crimes with financial ramifications. And this is exactly what the defendant did. He had in his possession a fraudulent driver's license in the name of Christopher B. Bailey. The driver's license had his photograph on it, matched his description. He possessed a counterfeit check made out to Christopher B. Bailey. When he endorsed the back of the check, his signature matched the driver's license. The account number was that of an actual business who was on the check. How he made those checks and those IDs, we don't know. So he's charged with the forgery for other than the check, the attempted theft from trying to get more than $300 from the bank, and for going through all that trouble of making himself his own ID and presenting himself as another person, he created the false identification that is to be within that statute of identity theft. The trial court was correct. The Intermediate Court of Appeals was correct. And on behalf of the state of Hawaii, I respectfully request that the judgment of conviction and the sentence in this case be affirmed. Thank you.
I know my time is brief, but there are a few points I want to make with regard to Ms. Prescott Tate's argument. I quickly wanted to point out that Ms. Prescott Tate quoted some language from the justification sheet for the bill, and she did substitute an and for an or, and I'm not saying that she did this intentionally, but I do want to make this clear to the court. The justification sheet says, Hawaii law enforcement officials need statutory tools to combat identity theft or the use of false identities, whether the criminal's purpose is to steal the life savings of a retiree or to perpetrate a terrorist act. So it's not and, it's or. And so that further strengthens our argument that the two are to be considered separately from one another. Also in Standing Committee Report Number 446, it says the purpose of the bill is to make the following acts criminal. One, stealing the identity of another. Two, obtaining identity documents under false pretenses. And three, using a false or fictitious identity. There's nothing there to connect stealing the identities of another to using a false or fictitious identity. It's presented as three separate criminal acts within the bill. The state argues that the definitions found in 701-118 don't apply to the statute because there's a quote-unquote better definition or something that works better in the statute. If you look at the plain language of 701-118, it says the definitions in this provision apply throughout the Hawaii Penal Code unless another meaning is plainly required. Our position is that another meaning is not plainly required here. Also, section 701-102 subsection 3 So the provisions found in Chapter 701 to 7016 apply throughout the Hawaii Penal Code unless the code otherwise provides. There's nothing in the code providing that the definition of 701-118 does not apply to the identity theft.
Mr. Juneau, this press box indicated there's presently a statute about using or obtaining false ID.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was that available in the fall?
I believe that the statute is actually obtaining a government-issued identification document under false pretenses. And I don't know if the statute is available, but I don't know if the state felt like they couldn't prove the elements of that crime because they don't know how or where to get the document. It is an Idaho driver's license, so I'm not sure if that's excluded from the provisions of this particular statute. Justice Acoba did bring up a good point, which is, and I tried to think of a hypothetical situation where someone could be guilty of the offense of identity theft in the second degree without also being guilty of attempted theft in the second degree. And I couldn't think of any situation. It seems that presenting the personal information is a substantial step in the attempt to, with the intent to commit theft in the second, is a substantial step. So it's not as if in most of these situations, if somebody presents a fictitious identity, they're going to get away with the underlying crime. And, Mr. Woodfall may be guilty of a lot of things here. He's taken responsibility for committing the offense of forgery in the second degree. He's taken responsibility for the offense of committing attempted theft in the second degree. We don't contest that he's guilty of those offenses. Our point is that legally, he cannot be guilty of the identity theft in the second degree because an essential element of that crime is not present. I also wanted to say there is some language in Act 224 that references the terrorist attacks of September 11th, and I understand that that's an important consideration, but those considerations are not dealt with through the identity theft in the second degree statute. This in no way relates to terrorism or people using false documents to get onto airplanes or to commit any other crime other than theft or attempted theft. These identity theft statutes are purely related to financial crimes or crimes involving stolen property. And in these statutes, the harm to the victim of the theft is the same whether the person presents personal information of a real person, personal information of a fictitious person, doesn't present any personal information. The harm to the victim of the theft, the harm to the bank in this case, is the same, and that harm has been dealt with by the legislature through the forgery statutes and through the theft and attempted theft statutes. I can't see any additional harm to the victim that arises because the defendant uses a fictitious identity. The harm in the identity theft statutes is the harm to the person whose identity is stolen, the ruined credit, the clearing your name from the sort of stain of being a person that commits offenses, the arrests, the being put on trial if the police believe that you actually were the one that committed the offense.
What's the difference between identity theft in the first degree and the second?
Identity theft in the first degree includes some other crimes, and it's a higher degree of theft.
The amount taken is more?
Yes, the amount taken is more.
And from the degree of first murder,
yes,
taking the terrorism and terrorism. Who's taking the terrorism?
It could. And the other thing I wanted to point out in the identity theft in the first degree, and I understand that my time is up, but if you look at the language of the identity theft in the first degree statute, it says the person transmits any personal information, and then the intent in that statute is with the intent to commit the offense of theft in the first degree from the person whose identity was stolen or any other person or entity. I think, again, if you look at the language of that statute, that indicates that this is a real person whose identity is stolen. I don't know how you intend to commit theft from the person whose identity is stolen if it's a fictitious person. So, again, we would ask the court to find that the ICA plainly erred here enter an order vacating the trial court's findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order denying Mr. Ruthwall's motion to dismiss count one and remand his case to the trial court for an order dismissing count one identity theft and dismissing Mr. Ruthwall's conviction as to that count. Thank you.
Thank you, folks, counsel.
Please rise. This Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii stands adjourned until further notice.